I want to look at one more theorist here, one more political theorist who comes in the 20th century. This particular work that we're going to look at, it was published in 1971, and this is one of the most, probably the most influential work of political theory in the 20th century. It's called The Theory of Justice, and in it, John Rawls is attempting to revisit some of these previous ideas. He's revisiting the idea of the social contract, and he's going to try to incorporate some interesting attempts at thinking about these sorts of things, with some of the good things and some of the mistakes that previous political theorists have made. So, in the excerpt I've given you, which of course isn't the whole book, but it's just the excerpt that I'm focusing on here, he starts out by telling us what he's trying to do here. So, as usual, it might not be a bad idea for you to use the advantages of the audio recording. I will pose a question, and then maybe pause the audio and try to find it for yourself before you continue with listening to my answer. So in the opening paragraph of this excerpt, Rawls tells us what he's going to do. He says what social contracts ought to be about and what they ought not to be about. So in that first paragraph, think about what he's saying there. What is he saying social contracts are not supposed to do, and what is he saying they should do? Well, he says right here, and he compares the familiar theories of some of these other folks, Locke, Rousseau, Kant. We didn't look at their particular contract theories, but we did look at Hobbes, and this would apply to Hobbes too. But he wants to take these social contract ideas to a higher level of abstraction, he says. But then he goes on to say, in order to do this, here's what we shouldn't do. Here's how we shouldn't think of a contract. We shouldn't think of the original contract as one to enter a particular society or to set up a particular form of government. Rather, the guiding idea is that the principles of justice for the basic structure of society are the object of the original agreement. Now, the principles that free and rational persons concerned to further their own interests would accept in an initial position of equality as defining the fundamental terms of their association. So, if you look at what Hobbes did, Hobbes went through his assessment of the state of nature, right? And then he says, okay, well, given that we want to avoid this state of nature, here is exactly the kind of government we should set up. We need to have this kind of contract. We need to have these provisions in the contract. We need to set up this particular kind of social structure, this particular kind of government. This is exactly how it needs to work. Rawls is coming along and saying, no, that shouldn't be the focus of the contract. The focus of the contract, rather, should be underlying principles. In other words, the contract itself shouldn't tell you specifically what kind of government you should set up or what kind of social structure you could have. No, the contract should be about principles that you'll start with, such that any kind of society that you build on top of these principles or using these principles will be a just one. I'm not going to tell you exactly what that society should look like. That's for you guys to decide and figure out. But we need some guiding principles to help us in determining the answers to those questions. So it's about the principles upon which we build society. It's not about individual particular societies. Now, he says, in somewhat agreement with somebody like Hobbes, that we are essentially interested in our own interests. We're concerned with our own interests. We're selfish, basically. Now, we have to try to understand some sort of contract such that free and rational people who are concerned with their own interests would agree to them. How do we do that? Well, he says the position we need to start from, he calls it the original position. The original position is the appropriate initial status quo, which ensures that the fundamental agreements reached in it are fair. This fact yields the name justice as fairness. It is clear, then, that I want to say that one conception of justice is more reasonable than another, justifiable with respect to it. So he goes on to explain why this is. So what is it in here that he's trying to talk about? He starts to talk about choice. He starts to talk about this problem of choice. He starts to talk about something called the veil of ignorance. Go in these next couple of paragraphs and try to think about what it is he's talking about there. What is this veil of ignorance thing, and why is it important? Okay, well, now that you've done that, let's give a brief explanation of what seems to be happening here. So he's basically saying, okay, so we have a problem, right? There's this problem because we're supposed to contract with one another. There's supposed to be this social contract that emerges, yeah? And the problem is that we're selfish, see? We're selfish people, and so, hey, if I, let's imagine that I, for example, get to be the world builder, okay? I get to be the one who decides, you know, what society is going to look like. Well, okay, I have a choice before me. I can make a society that is patriarchal, or one that is matriarchal, or one that is equal. Now, maybe I'll be biased toward the patriarchal society, because I'm selfish and I want advantage for myself. So maybe I will be biased and lean toward a patriarchal society. He says right in here, if somebody knows that they're going to be rich, well, then they may find it rational to advance the principle that various taxes for welfare are unjust. However, if you're poor, you might advocate the opposite principles because you're selfish. If you're rich, you don't want to be taxed because you're selfish. If you're poor, you want others to be taxed because you're selfish, right? So, okay, how are we supposed to come to any kind of agreement? Well, the issue here, it seems, says Rawls, the issue here essentially seems to be that you're biased because you want to bring in some sort of policy or whatever that will benefit your particular position or your particular circumstances. Our goal is to figure out some sort of agreement such that we're not biased. How do we do that? Well, what if you didn't know what your circumstances were going to be? What if you didn't know that you were going to be rich or poor? What if you didn't know you were going to be a man or a woman? Now, obviously you do, but what if you didn't? He says in there, I'm talking about this original position as a hypothetical position. He's not really saying you're not actually going to know if you're a man or a woman. But what he is saying is, hey, hypothetically, you have the rational capability of imagining that, right? So think about that for a second. Go back to my initial world building that I'm doing. I'm trying to build a society, right? And I'm choosing between a patriarchy and a matriarchy or an equal society. Well, like I said, I might be biased towards a patriarchy because I'm a man and I would get advantage in a patriarchy. But what Rawls is suggesting I do, he's saying, okay, well, imagine you didn't know where you were going to end up. You didn't know that you were going to end up a man or a woman or any particular gender. So if you're making the choice of the patriarchy or the matriarchy or an equal society, what would you choose as a selfish person who didn't know what your position would be? Am I going to choose a patriarchy anymore? Well, no, because I'm selfish. And what if I end up a woman in this society? I would be disadvantaged, and I don't want that. Am I going to choose a matriarchy? Well, no, because I'm selfish. And what if I end up a man? Then I'll be disadvantaged, and I don't want that. So I will choose the equal society such that however I turn out, I'll be good. I won't be disadvantaged. And I'll choose the equal society because I am selfish. And the idea here is that so would you. You would choose the equal society too because you're selfish too. So the veil of ignorance is this hypothetical situation where you imagine that you're ignorant of what your position, status, situation, circumstances in society will be. From this original position, behind this so-called veil of ignorance, you will rationally choose the most just, the most fair principles because of your selfishness. That's Rawls' suggestion here. That's really what he's getting at. Okay, what do you think about that? Does that make sense to you? That from this original position, behind this veil of ignorance, you will choose selfishly the most just principles. Now notice these principles he's talking about are principles that will build upon society. We will use the principles to build up society from them. All right, well, what then are the principles? Two principles of justice. I shall now state in a provisional form the two principles of justice that I believe would be chosen in the original position. So here we get what Rawls thinks any selfish, self-interested, rational, freely choosing person who is thinking and starting from the original position behind the veil of ignorance will agree to in the social contract. First, each person is to have an equal right to the most extensive basic liberty compatible with a similar liberty for others. This principle has come to be known as the equal liberty principle. Now, what it means is liberty is the key. Liberty is what matters. We should all have equal liberty, but that's not enough, because we could all have equal liberty if we have none, if we just all have no liberty. That's not good. We need to have equal liberty that is maximum. In other words, the freedoms and the rights and things that we should have should be the maximum amount. We should all have the most rights and freedoms that we can up to a point that's consistent with equal rights and freedoms and so on. Another way of saying this is as follows. I should have as much freedom and rights as I possibly can have up to the point where giving me more rights and freedoms would take away some of yours. And of course, you should have the maximum, the most possible amount of rights and freedoms that you could possibly have, up to the point where giving you more will take away some of mine. Equal. Maximum, but equal. That is the first and the most primary, the most important of the two principles. Principle two. This is called the difference principle. This has come to be known as the difference principle. Social and economic inequalities, notice they're only social and economic inequalities, not liberty inequalities. Social and economic inequalities are to be arranged so that they are both A, reasonably expected to be to everyone's advantage, and B, attached to positions and offices open to all. inequality is okay, Rawls is saying. This is very different than what somebody like Marx is claiming. Inequality is just fine for Rawls, as long as it's only social and economic inequality, and as long as these other two criteria are met, A and B. So let's think, for example, about one of the common age-old complaints against Marx's communism. Now, Marx denies that this is a problem, but a lot of people think it is. Why am I going to spend all that extra effort, going to school and training and so on, to become a doctor, when I get no advantage from that? I could get the same resources and the same stuff if I was just a garbage man. Why would I do that? Now, we saw Marx's answer to that in the Marx audio, but what Rawls does is he sort of says, well, yeah, okay, that kind of makes sense. You know, why would we do that? Why would we have this drive to continue to do that if there's no real incentive to do so? So he's saying, okay, well, I guess inequalities, social and economic, never liberty inequalities, but social and economic inequalities are okay. In other words, it's okay to, for example, pay doctors more if these other two criteria are met. Well, let's go through them. Is it okay to pay doctors more? Well, let's see. Does having doctors benefit everyone? Well, sure it does. A society that has doctors is better, everything else being equal, than a society that doesn't. In other words, having doctors doesn't just benefit the doctors, it benefits everyone. So, A is met. We're good on A. So the next thing we have to do to allow the economic inequality, to make it okay to pay doctors more, for example, is we have to make sure that the ability to become a doctor, that position of inequality, is open to everyone. A simple way of saying this is equal opportunity, right? We have to make sure that everyone has the equal opportunity to become a doctor. Now, what this does not mean, of course, is that I get to just go up to somewhere and say, hey, I want to be a doctor, and then I'm just handed my MD and a scalpel and asked to go into surgery. No. What it does mean is that I can go and say, hey, I want to be a doctor. And then it's like, okay, well, here's what you need to do. Here are the resources that you need to use. Here are the tests that you need to pass. Here's the knowledge you need to gain. Here are the classes you need to take. All of these resources are here, and they're all available to you. In other words, of course, think about it this way, that a lot of people who probably could be doctors aren't and won't be because, well, they were born in the wrong place. They have economic disadvantages because of a social situation or a racial situation or an economic situation. Didn't have enough money to go to school or the resources to go to a good high school or elementary school. Didn't have enough money to go to those good colleges and so on. All sorts of reasons. Otherwise, perfectly good candidates won't ever be doctors. And of course, for opposite reasons, some people who probably shouldn't be doctors are. So what Rawls is saying here is, if you're not a doctor, the only reason should be yourself, right? It shouldn't be anything else holding you back. The resources to become a doctor should be available to you. You still have to do all the stuff. You still have to show that you have the knowledge and that you've gained the skills and all those sorts of things. But you shouldn't be held back simply because of those other considerations. So, if the positions of inequality are to basically everyone's advantage, and if the ability to gain those positions of inequality are open to everyone, then, hey, We're good. We are good. Those social and economic inequalities are okay. Now, remember, the first principle is primary. You can't justify breaking the first principle by using the second one. The first one is the most important. The first one is taken care of, then you can talk about the second one. So, notice what Rawls hasn't done. He hasn't said, hey, here is exactly the kind of government, social structure, whatever you should set up. He's not saying representative democracy. He's not saying three branches of government, judicial, executive, legislative. He's not saying electoral college. He's not saying constitution. He's not saying any of those things. He's simply saying, here are the basic principles. Build whatever society you see fit, as long as that society and the structure of that society abides by these basic principles, it will be just whatever kind of society you end up with. It will be a just one. So, obviously there are other things to discuss here, but this really is the basic idea of Rawls' theory of justice. And he's thinking that these principles, properly applied, will result in a just society. So, what do you think? Do you think these are good principles? Do you think he's right? That if we really could and did abide by these principles, that justice would result? We can think of them as tests. Let's say we're considering passing some new legislation. Well, what we can do is we can say, okay, well, does this new legislation, does this new law, does it abide by the principles? Right? Does it follow these principles? And if it does, okay, then fine. Go ahead and pass it, and we can take a vote on it or whatever we want to do, but it's at least a viable option, a viable law. But if we recognize that, no, it actually violates the principles, then we just have to nix it, right? We just have to throw it out because it's an unjust law. What do you think? Sound reasonable to you? No? Yes? This, from 1971, this influential theory has had a lot of commentators over the years. But think about how your reaction to this works. Do you think Rawls has captured something important? Do you think he's updated the social contract to make it more viable, more accurate, more correct, more just than Hobbes? At the very least, it's a pretty interesting approach to take a step back and instead of looking at exactly specific laws or specific societal structures, to look at the underlying principles. So, obviously, there's much more political philosophy that can be discussed, including, of course, one of Rawls's own colleagues who essentially wrote a response book that disagreed with much of what Rawls said. His name was Robert Nozick, and he wrote a book called Anarchy, State, and Utopia. We're not going to talk about that, but by all means, check it out if you'd like. So with that, even though there's a lot more to discuss, we're going to kind of finish off our little foray into political philosophy here. Just a couple more things to talk about, and a new topic coming up next.